privilege of being here and sharing a little bit about the world and what's going on and that part of it that we live in. And I was reminded of a story. If you know me, you know I love a good story. And Clyde reminded me of a story when he talked about good sandwiches, wherever that was, that he had good sandwiches. There's a very dear couple. They don't know the Lord yet. We're thankful for the time that we get to spend with them, but they're our senior by a number of years, and when we go to Vic Falls, we often stay with them. And you can imagine this, they're well up into their 70s. They're sitting out, and it's hot this time of year that this conversation took place. And they're both sitting in a chair, each in a chair, and they've got this tub of water that you would soak your feet in, but it was cool water. And they were just trying to stay still and get cool and stay cool. And I don't know what it was that Vicky was reading, but she was reading something, and this very romantic thought came into her mind. And Vicky, she's run cafes, she's owned cafes, she's an excellent cook on the level of a chef, although I don't think she's been through official training. But she was sitting there, and she said, "Finn, what will you do when I die?" And of course, if you knew Finn, he's a character. I love hanging around Finn. And if she wasn't expecting the answer she got, she shouldn't have asked him in the first place. But Finn said, "I guess I'll have to eat sandwiches." Wasn't the romantic words that she was expecting to hear. So, husbands, be thankful. I am thankful for my cook. The message that goes with the presentation this year, what God laid on my heart to share, triggers from this verse. And I don't know, maybe it's because I'm a dumb Aggie, but verses that challenge me are verses that draw my attention. Verses that I don't know that I fully understand what the Lord's saying there. But this is an intriguing one. This is God speaking. It's in one of Asaph's Psalms. I said, not John, not Paul, not Keith. You've got to think who's talking here. I said, "You are gods. You are sons of the Most High." Now, I think, according to Paul, this might tie in. I want to plant that verse in your mind and let you contemplate the full implications of that, because they are, to me, overwhelming. But then you read in Proverbs, where there is no revelation, some translations, where there is no vision, the people cast off restraint. And in my mind, there's been a link made between those two verses. What was it we said this morning, Paul? He asked me, what are you going to speak on? And I guess you might, one way you could title it is, who you really are. Who are you? Whose vision of you is yours? Is it the world's? Be all that you can be, join the army, some saying like that, some definition, psychological definition that the world would put forward? Or is it God's vision with its full implications of who you are? And that's what guides his expectations. That's what guides his working in us and through us, is his vision for who we are, not ours. And when you have the wrong vision, if you don't understand, if it hasn't been revealed to you who you are and what he hopes of you, is it the USA today? Where people just seem to be in every fact. I'm not talking politics. Leave that out of it. But look at the moral base of our people and what's going on, that which has become acceptable, frighteningly acceptable, would indicate a severe casting off of restraint. Let those words sink in as we go through this presentation. Every year that I give a report, I dedicate it to someone. This year, it's dedicated to Brian, and I'm going to save his story at the end. But Brian is one of our neighbors, so to speak, there in Botswana. And he is the one that I'm going to wind up with, wrap this presentation up with. People want to know, well, Africa. There's a lot of people that think of Africa as a country. It's a continent. And that gives you a little perspective. It's four times the size of the United States. Where we are, Botswana is the highlighted country. We're in the far south. When we first went to Africa back in the 70s, there was a guy ruling in Uganda named Idi Amin. And someone said, aren't you afraid of going to Africa? Aren't you afraid of President Idi Amin? I said, well, he's about 4,000 miles north of us in a totally different country. It's not the country of Africa, it's the continent. And so we live in the country of Botswana. And a few fun facts, they're hard to see. I don't know if the lights were dim, some of my slides would appear better. Botswana is just slightly, if you've been here, you've heard this, it's slightly smaller than the state of Texas. Size-wise, say it's the same, almost 2.3 million people. So we're a sparsely populated country. People don't know, it's Africa's oldest democracy. And we have a blessing, the people there have a standard of living that much of Africa, I would dare say most of Africa, would aspire to have. And it is, there. You see that the religion, some people really land on it, 79% Christian. And this, it would take more time to fully explain that than I have, but that can be somewhat of a deceptive figure in terms of what you might expect there with that kind of number. Where we are, if you looked at that map, we live up here in this little corner. Namibia comes across with the Caprivi Strip, and we look down where these four countries come together. And taking a little closer look, this is where you see Kasani, Kazangula. We live in the village of Kazangula. They're 10 kilometers apart. And then you can see Livingston and Victoria Falls. And of course, most people have heard of Victoria Falls. But that the road, the population of Botswana is on the bulk of it's along the eastern boundary with Zimbabwe. And if you go far enough north, that's the major trucking route. You wind up at Kasani, Kazangula, and if you're a truck driver, well, any driver at the moment, you have to wait to catch a ferry, but they are building a bridge there. Our world, Botswana is a very dry place. Where would 26-inch annual rainfall be in Texas? That'd be somewhere west of Fort Worth. That's our rainfall. It's a dry place. Much of it receives far less. This is west of us where we live in Kazangula. And these unusual trees, they're baobab trees or the cream of tartar tree. The up in Kenya, some of the tribes believe this is the devil's tree because they said it looks like the devil came and he pulled the tree out of the ground, turned it over, and stuck it back in, and that's the root system up above. Well, how do you get there? Well, a lot of people have a lot of funny notions about Africa, just like they do about Texans. I got asked by a guy once in Nairobi, I think it was, do you still shoot Indians in Texas? No, we don't. Well, Botswana and where we live is a major safari leap-off point. So you can arrive there by airplane. Someone asked, well, how will you go back? We will go Dallas to Doha, which is in the country of Qatar, and Middle East. And then from Doha, we will fly to Johannesburg, and then Johannesburg up to Kasani. And this is a two-year-old airport. Or you can go the old-fashioned way. You can drive up to where we live. And this is the vehicle that we raised funds for a few years ago that gets us around. We've been as far north as Arusha, Tanzania. And our roads are pretty good. You know, you're probably thinking of sand tracks. And we got plenty of those in Botswana. And that's a good section. Sometimes we wish they would come in and take the remnants of the tar away, because the potholy road is much worse. And we've got our road hazards. This is sort of a typical, normal road hazard, but you also have... That guy had to go to the bathroom shortly after he got through with this inspection and change his shorts. Did you know elephants are so smart? My son-in-law works with Elephants Without Borders. That they trained elephants that they can sense tusks and other animal products that have been poached, and they've got them at their checkpoints, and these elephants actually... No. I usually get a few takers on that. But they do. This is their, where we have the privilege of living. It is their world. It's part of our world. And they have trails. Anybody that hunts know that deer, everything, cattle, they have their trails, and they've been traveling these, especially the elephants, for centuries. And they're known, some of them are so known, that they put signs up. That's Elephants Without Borders. That's where Rob works, my daughter's husband. And so they have these flashing lights at night, so you'll go slow because the animals can be crossing. But there's also other forms of wildlife that they're even wilder than the wildlife. But everything is headed for this river, because in a dry place, water is so important. And so animals and people congregate around the river. This is the Chobe, and the Chobe goes down and goes over what we have classified as one of the seven natural wonders of the world, Victoria Falls. And the cataract itself is a mile wide, so it's a huge thing. And the precipice there at the top, you're not seeing near the depth of it, is right at 74 to 77 stories tall. So it is awe-inspiring. And at night, when you stay in Vic Falls, we stay with Vicky and Finn, they've got glass panes, the old glass panes, and they're put in with window putty, and sometimes that putty in the sun dries out and the panes get loose and they'll rattle. In the wind, it'll push them back and forth. Well, at night, when it's real quiet, you hear them vibrating because the thunder of that water going over, the tons and tons of water every second, vibrates everything. Where we live is the one of the main things that people think about, and young people love seeing this, is the wildlife. And this is from last year. This is the only slide that's from last year's presentation. It's just so cool. I have to share it. This is my son-in-law and daughter, and that elephant is Kathy. She's a rescue project, and the trainer is off to the left, and she's a female. And just for perspective, that male would be a third again taller. They're massive animals. You just can't believe how big they are. And then the giraffes and the springbok, a sable. Now, I like, anybody in here ride motorcycles? Smart people. Okay, we got a few like me. I was an old Harley rider. I don't care for this thing they call an ape hanger. You see these guys, that's the most uncomfortable thing. I would think your arms would go numb after a while. And I can just picture an African on that Harley right there with his ape hangers just going through the bush, you know. But anyway, I've never seen anybody do that. Cape buffalo, he can be a piece of work, very dangerous animal. Niloticus crocodilius, the Nile crocodile. The hippo, they do like to get out on occasion and roll in the sand. And a puku, a young puku. And impala. Impala are called the Mickey D's, the McDonald's of the bush. You know why? If you could look, I don't have a rear end shot, but they've got dark hair that goes up like this on their flanks, gets to the tail head and comes down like this. And what is that? That's an M. They're the fast food for these fellas. That's who he's looking at. So, the mighty lion. And there, that bird is a koi bustard. The head is about that tall. You don't get the perspective in that picture. That's the largest bird in the world capable of flight. And in the same country is the largest bird in the world which can't fly, and that's a male ostrich and a hornbill. Our bird life and the whole place is just, it's just a wonder, God's garden. That's an anthill. You know, everything in Texas they say is bigger. Well, we don't have bigger anthills. That two young visitors that we had, and it's got holes in the base, and it acts, you know, God's design, there are holes that allow it, the top forms like a flue on a chimney, and you get this convection going, and it draws the oxygen down into the termite nest, and the heat from that stack pulls it out. So you've got a ventilation system that takes oxygen, ventilates the nest. Sorry? Oh. I thought my wife was telling me something I'd said wrong. She has a habit of that. You know, she, oh, that's not quite right. Oh, and I got a funny story on that one. They're white ants. They're white-bodied. They look like they're a little bigger than our termite. They look like a termite here, but ours tend to be smaller. And there's a, during the rains, when the rains hit, then your the air can be filled with these things. They'll swarm, and they'll go, and they'll start finding a place for a new nest. And so the African children will build something that I would describe as a teepee. They take saplings and put it in the ground over the nest, and then they'll take a piece of cloth, a chitangi, and put it over that. And then they have this flap, and they're all, we looked out in front of our house. There was a big termite nest in front of our house, and our kids were sitting down with the African kids like this, and they'd open the flap, and they'd reach in there, and then I'd see them roll their hands, and then they'd pop it in their mouths. They were eating those termites, and they roll them, they roll the leaves, the wings off of them. And I went out there and said, what are you guys doing? They said, Dad, have some. It's African popcorn, because it was crunchy when they ate it. So, I guess you had to be there. That's our house. And this is, again, people think of Africa. They don't think of a store that would look like this. Now, this is 5.5 hours south of us, but we've got 4, soon to be 5 stores that maybe not quite as well stocked, but we have a very comfortable life in that respect there. This, what's that look like? Anybody ever been into Lowe's? This is owned by the Walmart family, that business. They wanted to go in there, and like even small towns here, they will try to keep a Walmart out because it can have negative effects on local business. They blocked them from coming to South Africa. Well, when you've got as much money as Walmart does, they just bought an existing company. It's called Game. That's the Walmart side. And this is the Builder's Warehouse, and that's the Lowe's side of things. So I wish that was up where we live, but a great place to if you have a need. Now, one of our focus areas, our primary focus area, of course, is spiritual development. We do a lot of work. You'll hear us mention often the Disciples of Fellowship Church, started by a sweet Christian lady that's been there since the 60s. And we get together. This is Saturday morning get together, and we run through the songs and tie it in with the lessons and just have a extra time of fellowship. And that's Steve Cox, a shade picture in this lighting, dark picture. And he, visitors that come through, we'll often get them to speak at this little fellowship. And this little fellowship is where Robin has designed a Sunday school curriculum and can have upwards of 30 to 35 kids come from the community there. Another ministry of this church to the community is the Sunrise Easter service on the banks of the Chobe. And we gather there, and they listen to this long-winded, wide-haired preacher, the price you pay for communion. We have communion, and then after the fellowship, singing and fellowship is over, then we have hot cross buns and coffee and tea. Another big outreach event for this little congregation is what's called Carols by Candlelight, and this is just before Christmas. And that's Hazel, my granddaughter, newest granddaughter that side, and me welcoming the people to come. This you will see later when we dwell on the education. This is the school hall that's being built at the elementary school, primary school, that Robin, I'm on the school board, Robin works 4 days a week there tutoring and working with kids with learning handicaps and just generally behinds. It's an English medium school, and for many of the children, they're not, English isn't their first language. So we have this event every year. The Sunday school kids come and they'll put on a nativity play, and then I will give a message of exhortation at the conclusion. And it's just a real blessing to be a part of. This, again, you can't see very clearly because of the lighting, but this is a group of young people. This is one of my highlights of this work. Their youngest is about 26, going to be 27 now, ranging up to the mid to late 30s. They asked me to mentor them. They wanted to reach their community and ultimately their country for Christ. And the three pale faces there are three Harding University interns that were there with us. But we plug them into what we're doing. They're at our house often, and we share a lot of fun times together and exhort each other on. Another aspect of what we do with their spiritual development is marriage and family ministry. And we've teamed up with some old-time missionary friends of ours, the Allisons, Fieldon and Janet Allison. They're based in East Africa. We're the Southern Africa. And this is a leadership conference that we held in Zambia for church leaders in the southern region to take this material and teach it in their congregations. Robin and I went to Malawi. This is at Namikongo Mission in Malawi. It's a very old work. There were 52 people there, and I was up there. You can't see very well, but I'm trying to teach them the yodel. You know, I needed Paul. No, I was teaching. We teach on things that are needed information for a family to be what God intends it to be. Then things as simple as budgets, and it's a hard thing in that culture. One of the lessons that Robin's doing this module, if somebody comes and has a need, and you've got the money or the need, the tendency is to give it to that relative that has the need. But the problem is when they've got obligations, they're plugged in now, they're putting their kids in school, or they've got something that money's accounted for. They may have it in on their person or in a bank account. But one of the things we try to get them to see in budgeting is you need those school fees are going to roll around every quarter. And even though the money's in the bank, it's spent. You can't just, or you're going to create other issues. So this is something that God is helping African people sort out in their culture. They have to answer it. We as foreigners can't come in and tell them what to do, but we lay out something as simple as the idea or concept of budgeting, and then it makes sense. They take it and they run with it. And then what we do to sort of, we don't give written tests, but their test for us to gauge what are they getting is we have them create dramas and teach something that we've taught them in the form of a drama. And then they will turn around. They're, again, a face-to-face society. Drama is a big part, especially in the village. Now, that's changing. Africa's changing. The urban centers are becoming a lot like what you would experience in life here. But especially on the village level, drama is still... And drama speaks even to the urban church worshiper. It's something that speaks. So they put on these plays, and they're creative. They are fun and entertaining, and that allows us to see what they're getting from what we're saying. And this was our group. We had over 50 participants, about 52 at times. That's Oma and Opa, Grandma and Grandpa, with all their spiritual children there. And that's Ben Hayes. He's a third-generation missionary. His father, who we met when we were in Zambia in the 70s, and then his father we met in Kenya when we were working in Kenya, and now he's back there in Malawi. One of the other things that we do in the spiritual development aspect of our work is in our community is 7,000 people between Kasani, Kazangula. In that community of 7,000, there are 62 different churches. And so I like to describe people what the context sort of is. In most of the instances, is you've got a theology that's about a mile wide, but only an inch deep. And we made it very plain to people, we didn't necessarily, in that context, and that's more and more the context in Africa, we didn't go there to plant churches, add to the confusion in one respect. If missionaries, one of my basic guiding philosophies is, if a missionary's done his job, he will cease to be the tip of the evangelistic spear and will become more of an equipper and standing up the local church to finish the task, to carry on. I've become a part of a group called Ministers Fraternal. Reluctantly, and only recently, has God revealed to me what blessing that can come from that. As an American, my culture raised with time is money. And if you're enslaved to that concept totally, you won't work well in Africa because people are more important than time. And that's a big lesson that I've learned. But traditionally in the Kotla, when the chief meets and has a big meeting, especially in Tswana culture, everyone can have their say. If we were to have a meeting in here, it would be expected that every one of us would say something. And they repeat everything that's been said and maybe add one other word, one other little concept. And they're long on talking about things but short on doing anything about it. And that, to me, is frustrating. And so this can tend to be, this kind of organization, just chew up a lot of your time with no real tangible benefit, outworking of it. Well, I got drawn into this, and at the current moment, there's some really neat people involved. One of those is Chirwa. He's a Malawian, but he's the pastor or leader of the UCCSA, United Congregational Churches of South Africa. That was the organization that was begun from the work of Livingston Moffat, so it's a very old group of churches. And they asked me to come and speak on leadership, church leadership. So being a part of this group has allowed me to move into these churches and have the bully pulpit, so to speak, by building the relationship with these people. This, we also reach back to where we did work. This is the way, the context that we lived when we were raising our kids. And this is the compound of George and Sitori Kapango. And Robin was ill. She was supposed to have been with me on this trip. But I went, and that's George. He does have hands. He's just as cold. And the way he's wearing his jacket, his hands are behind him. Everybody says, does he not have any arms? So George is nearly 100. Can't wait for you to meet that guy. Most of you will probably never come to see us in Botswana, but you'll get to meet him on the other side. Faithful, nearly blind. And that's his wife on the left, Sitori, and a niece there in the middle. Another thing that we focus area is educational development. And this is a little Christian English medium primary school. It goes from preschool through seventh grade, standard seven. And the name of the school is Nokea Butsilo, which means river of life. And when we have visitors, we plug them into working with the students that are there. And like I say, Robin does a lot of work with the kids on a weekly basis, and they're the future. And this is normally where I hand over to Robin and let her describe what's going on there. These are the preschoolers, and from standard one through seven, they get field trips. They get to go, and there's some fascinating places up there that they get to go. But the little ones, they don't get to do anything. So somebody hatched this idea: let's go to Mrs. Honey's house. And so they have the preschoolers, they bring them out in the school vans, and they are circling up here to pray. They will pray over their lunches that they brought. And then Robin and Elise make learning stations, four or five learning stations, and they split them up, and they, of course, got some teacher's assistants, and they work them through these learning stations. And they have a big, fun time there at our place. Another thing that we do is the working with the illegal immigrants that are in the detention center in Francistown. We've come alongside Patricia, and this is one of the most godly, praying women I have ever met. And they brought the ladies at the Kaufman Church. There's a group of them that sew dresses for women and for little girls. And so we brought a whole bunch of dresses to be handed out. And we go and we contribute food and we speak to them. We try to go down once a month as our target. And she's a really neat lady. And like I say, we're partnering with her. Don't want to commandeer that ministry from her in any way. And we deal with the long-haul truck drivers. We've told you before, one of the reasons that we went back was because of the HIV/AIDS crisis. Truck drivers are a high at-risk group and responsible for a lot of the spreading of that disease. Botswana used to vie for the top, the number one country with the highest per capita HIV infection rate. That's not a title that you want to hold. And through gifts from this government set in motion by George H.W. Bush, the funding of antiretrovirals, ARVs, for AIDS sufferers in Botswana, they give ARVs free to anyone that's diagnosed HIV positive. Now, the problem, and what makes this such a needed thing, is a doctor told me there, and I may have told you this last time, this is not new information, but some of you may be new to us, there's three cocktails that are used of drugs that are called ARVs. Because the behavior is continuing, the resistance is building to the ARV. So tier one's gone. They're on tier two. And when tier two becomes the virus is resistant to tier two, that drug, tier two drug, then they can't afford that third drug. It's too expensive. So we seem to see an uptick in the death rate, and it's not something that's talked about. You know, they may not know themselves the reason for the death. But these guys come, they can be stuck there. They're building the bridge. It maybe will be done next year, if not then the year after. But these guys have nothing to do while they're there but prostitutes and the bars. And so we walk up and down the line and hand out literature, talk to these guys, and we're in the process, as was last time, of setting up the Truckers Chapel. And Steve and Noah came from the Kaufman Church. There's the foosball table, and we're putting tile down in there, and we don't have regular hours yet, but we're looking for someone to take that over that can be there, because I can't be there much of the time. And I think that man is possibly going to be Robert. And you'll hear more about him in a minute. But that's Robert in the center. And he's the one that's manning it now while I'm away. And John, I have not forgotten your promise to spring for a ping pong table. And so we're just about on the verge of maybe calling in that on that promise. Then finally we have interns that come to us, and we plug them into what we're doing. And these were the three Harding interns, and what they're doing is teaching a life skills class that basically is equipping them to make wise decisions, especially when it comes to the relationships between men and women. And this is so important. We do have prostitutes that are there. but they have a very, they're hard to reach. They struggle deep down. I think it's part of the reason for the response that you get if you try to engage them very deeply about who they are, and especially if it turns the conversation towards what they are doing. And the recidivity rate, the return rate of them falling back into that is very high. So we felt at our best interdiction point, especially as it works out in the local community, is teaching particularly the young girls that are vulnerable to this, because we only go right now up through junior secondary, which is junior high. They go away for senior high school. And if you don't, if at that point your education stops, there's not much that you're qualified to do. So they wind up in housekeeping, working in stores as stockers, working in people's houses to clean their houses. And it's a lot of hard work for very little return. And one group, USAID, and some other organizations have opened a salon there in Kazungula for ladies that supposedly have come out. But the problem is, they make in a month what they could make in 3 nights applying their trade. And so these, our work lady that works for us, and a very dear woman to us, Uratile, came one day to work, and she's just, oh, our children, our girls, they're out of control. And I asked her, because I knew she only had a son, what do you mean? And it was her mates she was talking about, her peers, and said, our standard sevens have learned that they, that's seventh grade, have learned that they can go down to these trucks and make a lot of money. And so that's why we feel at this juncture is the best time to equip them. And I always tell people, and I'm sure I've said it here, I say it often, my life, knowing the right thing and the wrong thing to do, was never my biggest issue. My biggest issue was finding the power to do the right things, especially in the areas where I was really tempted. And so there's all sorts of knowledge that they have, but it's, they need Jesus to be able to say no to the temptation to pursue that. And then we just, as we're wrapping up here, we just God's put us there. He's called us there just to live our lives out there, to live in Brian's world. And that's Ethan, Elisa's oldest boy. Loves to cook with Granny. They're making a cake there. People get pregnant over there, and this is Elisa's, they call it a tea. It's not a wedding shower. It's a wedding tea. A baby tea. And these ladies can cook. It's unfortunate that men don't get to go to this, because they've got good food. And another thing that we do is sort of that happens about twice a year is what they call a jumble sale. It's where people get together and they put their old clothes, furniture, you name it, books that you want to sell out. It's like a garage sale or a yard sale, and the proceeds go to help fund Nokiabutsilo. And then another thing with the disciples fellowship, we had a little extra money, so we sprung for some material to make costumes for the nativity. This was the first year we've had proper costumes. And so Robin and the ladies, there's two of them, on sewing machines, and they're making wings, angels' wings, and halos, and the ladies just, it's sort of a modern day equivalent to a quilting bee. They just had the biggest fun. I ran in and out of there once and sounded like they were having more fun than work. This is sort of our team. This is what we look at as our team. That's Rob and Elise, Ethan, and our newest addition, Hazel. And we don't have movie theaters and nice restaurants really to go out to. We do have restaurants, but they're on the safari level, and they're a little more than our budget can regularly afford. So we like to come out to this is Lusuma Valley, and have our braais, our cookouts. And right behind Rob, who's standing there, is a road. That's on the Botswana side. And in better light, you'd see that dark strip at the top is the road on the Zimbabwe side. So we're sitting there looking into Zimbabwe. And when the sun goes down, right there behind Ethan is our fire. We have our fire there. It's what we're just getting set up. And we'll cook our meals. And after dark, the starlight so bright because we don't have that light pollution. And you can see elephants. Often we'll be sitting there, and the elephants will walk as far as from here to that wall, And they know you're there because it's so bright. You can see their trunk. And as they walk past you, that trunk stays on you. They're just making sure you stay put. And of course, it's a fun time to get out. And the kids they got these huge elephant feces, are these big, almost like hay balls. And when they dry out, you can kick them like soccer balls. So our kids are out there playing with these big elephant druts. And they do get dirty. It's hot. And so we bought the little pool, and we put Hazel in the pool. And, of course, at the end of that time period, they're so dirty, and we've got a water tank for when we travel on the top of our truck. We give Hazel and Ethan a shower and a bath, and they go into their pajamas, so they're asleep when their parents take them home. And she was born in Khabarovny, and she's just a joy. But what we're there for, our purpose for being there, is to see new life, to encourage the birth of new life. This is KG for you. You'd probably find it easiest to say. Her name in Setswana is Kakamatsu, which means marvel or miracle or glorious thing or event. Kakamatsu. She's 18. She's got probably the mental ability of a 10-year-old. Mark, her father, is an old flying mission pilot. We've known them for years. We were in Shekawe when they came to the country and they started flying up there. It's how we got to know he and his wife. They could not have children. So they put in expressed their desire to them, we'd like to adopt. And it's hard and it's a long process in Botswana. But they got a call one day. There'd been an accident. And the emergency people, when they got to the accident, working the site, it was close to the end of the day, mom and dad had been killed. So they were able to identify them. When they got a hold of the grandmother, the grandmother said, "Where's the baby?" And this is, there was no baby. It was a baby. And so the next morning, in the light of day, they went back to the crash site, and Kakamatsu had been ejected from the vehicle, infant, and was laying in the bush, still alive. Tough young lady. Well, the grandmother said, "I cannot take care of this child. So would you like to, the grandmother has given you the option, would you like to adopt this child?" And they said, "Of course, of course." Well, after a couple of days, as they were going through the medical examination of KG, it was discovered she had severe head trauma. And they called Mark and Deb and said, "She'll never walk, talk, or see. Do you still want this baby?" And they prayed for it overnight. There's a tremendous book that Deb wrote that's just a blessing to read. It's K is for Keep, short for Kakamatsu. And Mark, you know, after the end of their prayer, said, "You know, we felt like this was God's baby, our God's child, meant for us. Why would we then decide, if there's going to be some problems, that this isn't God's baby for us?" And so they took KG. She's been through many surgeries. She won't win a foot race. But she understood who Jesus was and her need for him. And so Mark said, "Keith," and KG and I have a special relationship. I'm Uncle Keith, and we go out on dates, and I take her to, it's the equivalent of Brahms here, I guess you could say. We go out for ice cream. That's a real treat for her. And he said, "KG wants to be baptized. We'd like you to do it." We're at the other end of the country. And I said, "Mark, that's every privilege for a father that every father should look forward to. You should do it, not me." He said, "Well," he said, "I'll tell you what, let's both do it." And so we both got there in the water and birthed our sister into the kingdom. And then we have Robert. And this is Robert. And this is the young man that was sitting under Trucker's Chapel. He's the young man that will be manning that today. Robert, I studied for several years with him, and he made that decision. And we baptized him. This was set up in our front yard. And I highlight this, the opportunities that come my way, partly through this, like, minister's fraternal. This is a portable baptistry. Because I got, the first time the need arose for it, I had got called to baptize a young woman. But there was no standing water. What do you do? So I got online, found a design, and this guy who's a welder, he helped me. We came up with this design. It'll fold up and go back into the back end of a small sedan car. It's just the water you've got to be able to find. So there was a guy that was referred to me that wanted to be baptized. And so we studied, and okay, you understand. But he was a member of a church that I knew his pastor from Ministers Fraternal. And I said, have you spoken to your pastor? Because I don't want him to think that I'm sheep stealing. And so at a meeting, the next meeting, I didn't see him again. I went and I saw his pastor. And at the end, he said, I understand that you know so-and-so. I said, yes, we studied together. And he said, well, you know, his request, I started asking around in my congregation, and very few of my congregants have ever been baptized. Would you be willing to come and teach? And this is a 300-plus member church. Would you be willing to come and teach and help me baptize these people? And I said, certainly. Certainly. So Robert is a neat guy. That was the event of his baptism. That was a little sidebar. The police camp, he works at the police camp, and he's such a joy to be around. He's such a neat guy. They had a birthday party for him, and people that had transferred out of there came back for his party. And so he's one of my, he said, you're my best friend. Would you come and be my second, so to speak, at his party? And he's, if you ever get over there, I want you to meet Robert. But that brings us to the end of our little picture today into that world. As I said at the beginning, this is dedicated to Brian. That's not Brian. Because of privacy issues, I couldn't put a picture of Brian. That's Victor. He's the son of one of the deacons at Disciples of Jesus. Victor is a little bit older than Brian. Brian was a first grader. I, one day, in terms of people, often ask, what's your days like? What's a common day for you? And I said, well, they're sort of common, and you never know, though, what's going to happen. Most are not. Something different happens every day. I got a call, and it was the secretary for the Ministers Fraternal, and she said, we've got a situation. We don't know quite what to do. Could you help us? And I said, well, I will if I can. What's up? Well, Brian was in a situation he was being beat mercilessly by his stepfather. That was the term used. I don't think marriage was involved, but the man that was called stepfather, that they were living in his house, was not only sleeping with his mother, but with his sister, teenage sister, as well. And the neighbors suspected that he probably was observing when he shouldn't have been, and the father would chase him out of the house and just beat the thunder out of him. And the law, unfortunately, often turns a blind eye. And so there was a known problem there. And what had happened, and I will tell you later, but for the sake of young years here, how I met him in a hospital ward. Turns out his birth father harvested organs. This is the way I can put it. I asked John how, and I got this thought. Harvest some of his internal organs to be sold for witchcraft, and there's a lot of money in it. And so as his birth father did that to him, and I met him, he was in a bed in a hospital ward, and he was rapidly, like a child, recovering. But for over 3 months, he was in that hospital ward. And I came home, and I told Ron, I want to adopt. I'd never felt the urge to adopt a child before as strongly as with Brian. And I said, I just came all excited. We need to adopt Brian. And first thing, Robin says, do you realize how old we are? And I started thinking about it. And I said, yeah, you know, I'm real gung-ho on that idea, but honestly, she's going to bear the brunt of a lot of this, being at the house. Also, given what we do, if they do approve you, you have to stay in that country for 2 years while they observe you. So with as much international travel as we do around Africa, it just wasn't something that it seemed like was for us. But boy, my heart yearned to do that. And so we finally got him through a friend into a program where he's in, like Bowles Home, a common model here. There's a house parents, a family with 10 or 12 kids that live in a house, and they will be taken care of. So Brian was taken, is at the other end of the country. In the 3 months he was there, none of his family ever went to see him. He had one schoolmate go to see him. And so only the visitors came was ones that I had organized, and we took him toys and things to do because he just was in a hospital ward in a bed, and books and some food. So hopefully Brian is better off. And one of the positive outgrowths of this, we've been carrying on, we use this chat facility called WhatsApp. And that minister's fraternal, they're saying something like this shouldn't happen again. We need to come up with some sort of foster program while they decide what to do with these kids. So our purpose there is to share God's vision with the people. Jesus, you know, back to Asaph's psalm in 82, do you not know that you are God's? And he says, well, Keith, that's kind of a sketchy interpretation there. Maybe you're not reading that exactly right. Now, okay, I'll give you that. But Jesus adds his commentary. He's defending his claim to being the Son of God. And he said, he's talking to Pharisees. Is it not written in your own law, I've said you are God's? And if God thinks that of you, then why are you doubting, given the evidence that you've been given, my sonship, my divinity? So, if we do not have God's vision of who we are, then it's doubtful that we will live up anywhere near his expectations. But if we do grasp that we are, and I struggle with God's, me, but I see reinforcement for the idea of what God's trying to get us to dwell on, and that of being a parent. We're two people. You know, God's not a killjoy. He's not about stopping people from having fun when he has the edicts, his teachings about the rules that govern the relationship between men and women. But the reason why it's important to him is that a man and a woman have the opportunity to come together and create, be a part of the creation process of something that's eternal. Eternal. And so we're not like God in that we can make something out of nothing. But he said he's made us in his image. What exactly does that mean? What does Paul hint at when he says in 1 Corinthians 13, you shall know as you are known? That tickles my thought. So John puts it this way, where I want to leave it with you, is, dear friends, now we are children of God. That's who we are. And what we will be has not yet been made known. But we know that when he appears, we shall be like him, for we shall see him as he is. As God unfolds his vision of who we are in our lives, it is incumbent, it becomes the natural outworking of who we are to share that vision with others. Be what God sees you and wants you to be. And that's all we're doing in Botswana. God's plunked us down over there, and we're living our life, as flawed as it is, just trying to share God's vision with the people while it's still today. And that task really is not really that different for you. I'd like to close with reading a song. It's by Stephen Curtis Chapman, and it's called For Who He Really Is. You guys know that song? Too many hypocrites, I heard her say. I even saw it in the headlines today. How can I follow God when his own people turn away? She said, nobody's perfect, but I just want to see somebody living what they say they believe. If they've got all this world needs, like they say, I wonder why they won't give some away. The chorus. Can she see God for who He really is and what He sees in you and me? Can she see God for who He really is? For who He really is all she really needs to see. He slips into the church and puts up his guard. They look so happy, but his life's been so hard. He keeps his distance so they won't see his scars. It's just religion all dressed up in white. And God is love as long as you're living right. But does he know that Jesus also has scars? And his love can reach him no matter how far? Can he see God for who he really is and what he sees in you and me? Can he see God for who he really is? For who he really is all he really needs to see. The skeptics are watching to see who will fall, while those disillusioned search for the truth in it all. Maybe today we'll cross the paths unaware, and they'll stop and look at us, and what shall they see? Can they see God for who he really is? And what he sees, or they see, in you and me. Can they see God for who he really is? For who he really is all they really need to see. Father, thank you for loving us. Thank you for that vision that you have of us that led you to commit your own Son, whose death and resurrection we celebrated today, that allows us to see, to catch a glimpse of what your purposes are for us. And this side of time, I suspect, a lot of it will be shrouded in mystery. And that leads us to just lean, as our sister sang this morning, lean on you for our understanding, for everything, as we wait for the revelation. And creation is supposedly longing for that revelation of who we really are. Father, forgive us when we doubt you. Forgive us for our lack of faith. And I pray that you will help, just like we, with all that's within us, in every way that we can, we're trying to touch our community there in Botswana. I pray for this little body here that you do the same thing, that they love their neighbors, that they see them as your children, and seek to lift them up and support them as together, Father, those who call your Son Lord, as together, we move towards that day until we can come home. That's our prayer. That's the love that and the vision and the hope that binds us when we're worlds apart. And I pray that you be here. The times are getting dark in this country. Let this little fellowship be your light in the community of Greenville and then around the world. We pray these things in the blessed hopes that is ours in Jesus. Through his name, amen.